It's 3:35. Custa has graciously joined us today. We're here to talk about some OWCS. We're here to talk about the meta. We're doing all kinds of things. Custa, how you doing? How are things?
I'm doing good. It's good to have some form of Overwatch esports back. OWCS has been fun so far. Like, obviously, it's not the Overwatch League, and we're definitely not we're not living the dream, but it's been fun nonetheless.
It does seem, it is nice to have back. It's nice to have something to watch and something to kind of break down and digest. Iska, yep. How much have you watched?
I caught a couple of player streams. I watched a ton of Funny Astra, I think. Oh, a ton is a lie. Like 3 hours, I think, in total. It's also like, it's definitely a little bit more challenging to keep up with everything. There's still, to my knowledge, there's not a schedule, broadcast schedule, when everything is happening. I assume they will have to make a selection, which games have to be broadcast. That has not been communicated yet. I don't even think players or teams necessarily know when they will play yet. I feel like that's really like okay, the rough time outlines have been communicated. By the way, they seem super rough for the West Coast. I think they started 1 p.m. if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So good luck doing that if you have a job or you know, you're in university and have classes. But yeah, overall, like, I feel like the communication around this is a little bit lackluster in terms of being able to keep up with it. And it's not even necessarily that the information is hidden. It's just not out there.
Now that's concerning. Is that something that you kind of, obviously working through the Swiss stage, is that something that you guys kind of like felt at all, Custa?
I think the Swiss stage was the thing that was the most clear because it was like, that's the first round, right? They're there's going to be 9 rounds, here's the thing. But I agree with Yiska. It's like, if we had qualified, I would have been like, well, now what, right? Like, I still don't even know what, you know, as someone who is co-streaming the event, how long the window of games are going to be played. As Yiska said, there's a lot of games and they'll be played simultaneously. How many rounds are they going to be played? How much time am I going to have to stream? Are these going to be broadcast? All those kind of things. So like, the information might be out there if you go digging, and I'm sure behind the scenes you could find it, but publicly to the fans, it feels like it could be difficult for people to just know what's going on, which I think it can be a problem.
I ask because, I mean, far be it for me to say that teams are not informed based on the information that they definitely have, but which team reads? We know from Overwatch League that basically nobody does.
Yeah.
But on an email. I saw plenty of even people that made group stage ask whether, like, when stuff is starting up. There's, in the rule set, it basically says the time, but there's 5 days where the first round will take place. You will only have to play 3 matches, so you don't necessarily know when your first game is, and I strongly assume, considering you cannot stream all of the matches, that the broadcast will be picking and selecting which time slots you want, so they are shuffling it around, which is also, by the way, I think the real difference in structure to the Swiss stage, because from my understanding, it was all bots, right? Like, you had like bots in your lobby that created everything, right, for you. And by the way, this disrupts the organization in another way, which is now this time it's not set up by bots; it's presumably done by admins. And therefore, it's less likely that we also will get the stats. I actually quite liked it on the Faceit page. You had access to a bunch of stuff via the API. I don't think that will be possible for the group stage. And that is presumably because real people will be, you know, scheduling everything and trying to get everyone to a lobby. And therefore, there's no automatic stats tracking on those lobbies. So I personally assumed that the broadcast will just be asking for games based on their, you know, best knowledge on what games could be interesting in these first rounds.
I will say something on my end, because I signed up for the co-streaming thing. There is like a sign up thing, and then they wanted to get you to get into the Faceit like website so you can get a clean feed. So I would assume that broadcast would hopefully be doing something similar to that. But then it's like, well, they probably want to have their OBS team in there so they can schedule that. So I agree, there could just be like, if they have to start doing it manually, that could cause a huge conk in, like slowdown of the system, because the thing that makes Faceit so great and the Swiss stage so great is it was very seamless. Other than that one team that went to like map four, at least in North America, that went to like map four, all three rounds of every single map. So their match took like 2 hours compared to everyone else's 1 hour. It was pretty seamless for the most part.
It's good. Sounds like the new systems are all pretty streamlined and integrating well. It's just, you know, as we get deeper into 2024, gonna hide in a weird, very echoey way, kind of having to rebuild the ship as it goes. And maybe it's not as bleak as it seems. We will see. But we're going to talk a little bit about the meta. We're going to have, I do have some questions for Custer regarding some concerns coming out of Korea. You know, I'm seeing a whole lot of 3-0. I know Yiska loves a great 3-0. Is this maybe a problem, an inherent problem of opening up to more of a grassroots scene? Excited to kind of get that explored a little bit. I don't know.
I think 3-0s are very common in any type of open circuit, right? Which is the way it's going to be, right? It's important to remember, even in Korea, as much as some of these rosters are stacked, this is still the group stage for just the Korean region.
Right.
Then we're going to go to Asian region. But like I think the issue that this Asia region is going to have is if it's a stomp in the Korean group region, like it's going to be more of a stomp in the Asian region where the three Korean teams end up facing against, was it the three Japanese teams and the two Pacific teams? Because those rosters are cool and they're fun to watch in their own right. They're nowhere near as good as the top three of Korea. Like top three of Korea is probably top three of the world, close to. There may be a European team that could fight it, a North American team that could fight it, but for the most part, they're going to just dominate over the region.
Yes.
So there's going to be a lot of 3-0s. That's what happens when you have an open circuit. And I think for now, the important thing that needs to sort of be like portrayed is like, this isn't a competitive part of the tournament. This is a, hey, let's see who can qualify. Everyone can play with their friends. But like, if you watched in North America, any of the Toronto Defiant matches, I'm pretty sure they 2-0 swept Spawn Camp, like every single team, like even the last team to go 9-0. Like that's just going to be how it is in Swiss formats.
I will say, and then, I don't think it's necessarily only a thing of open formats. It's a thing of Overwatch. Over 50% of all our matches that have ever been played were 3-0s. This is just a very one-sided game between like some teams are just like so much better, right? Than there's just never been a situation where more than half of the league were even really competitive with the top teams, right?
Yeah.
So, and then meta swings just favor, like swing so hard in one direction. Yeah, you could argue that that's a flaw with the game, but yeah, I think you're right. It's more likely to happen in open systems. But given that we're in a tournament format, I think the selection will hopefully quickly get us closer, you know, once we're out of the first group stage. But yeah, not too many great matches have been played, other than you know the odd few in those situations where like there was a 7-1 team or like a you know a 7-0 or whatever, and we had some bangers there, right?
Well,
definitely. I think you're gonna have like those little like hidden gems, but I think the vast majority of the games being broadcast and streamed and maybe even co-streamed are gonna be kind of carried by the broadcaster, which kind of points me in that direction. Is like how, if this is a canary out of the coal mine, to use that metaphor for example, like how does this impact like the greater like viewer experience? Is this something that's going to have to be a little bit more entertaining from like a co-streaming and maybe even a broadcast perspective?
I think so. And I actually think that's one of the reasons so many people got invested in the team that I was a part of, right?
Okay.
So like, because the thing about our team that made it really interesting is we're not super good, right? Like we're not the best, like by any means. But what that meant is I would say 7 of our 9 matches that we played in were very competitive. Like they like one team wasn't like heavily favored. We ended up finishing like 53rd or something like that in the tournament, going 6-3. But like, The two of the matches we lost, like one we had an egregious C9, and then the other one we had like an overtime push on Circuit Royale in like the final fight of the entire match. So it's like there were some really fun matches and people were really invested, and that's what people enjoyed. So I was surprised to see not as many streamers doing the same thing. Like, I was surprised you didn't see Seagull join a team or Flash join a team, like all those kind of guys, because there's a lot of interest from fans. And that's really where I think the main interest should be garnered. Get those fans in there in the Swiss stage where you have your streamers come. And then as it progresses, the games get more competitive. They play at the top level. Then those fans can transition. I think OWCS needs to find a way to incentivize streamers to do that.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's content too. Like having that, you know, story to tell, and it I don't know, it seems kind of no brainer, but who am I to say?
And honestly, like they could have absolutely made groups, I think. Like if they just get a couple of pro players on, did you know, Custa, that I asked, and I think it's quite correct, that you were among one of the only former Overwatch League players that didn't make it into groups. I think it was you, Apply, and then actually, you know, the Runaway Boys from season 2 also didn't make it in.
To the thing. Well, the thing is, I don't think a lot of that. In our defense, for me and the boomers of Overwatch, let me defend ourselves. I don't think a lot of people were competing. Like I think McGravy was on a team as well. Oh no, actually, I think that was for the J3 tournament. But like, I think a lot of the players that like the XL guys, they're just trying. They're either trying their hearts out or they're not doing it casually anymore. I think that's the big divide that I think we need to like meet with, you know, in a big way of like people trying. But the thing that I was most impressed with as well, because I was like, oh, you know, there aren't that many good teams in, you know, North American Overwatch. There's a lot of really good collegiate teams.
Yes.
That just like they have a couple of really good players, but more importantly, they like scrim a lot. They play a lot. They've been playing in tier 3 for a while. And they were difficult to deal with. And I think that was a cool thing, is that there were a lot of like unknown teams and players that sort of like made their way up. But, you know, to your original question, yeah, the boomers, you know, it's hard out here, Yiska. You know, the bones start to hurt a little bit more. You're going to bed a little bit earlier. You know, it's just hard to keep up with these 17-year-old kids.
Look, just pull the flats. Just like get better duels.
Yeah. Well, even my team's really good. Well, we actually kind of popped off. It was actually awesome to have like a squad like that. It was funny because we have a bunch of like expos, like Emon going all the way back to Selfless. We had Apply from the Valiant days. Car Q though, this was his first tournament he's ever competed in ever.
Wow,
which
that's
was
surprising.
Shocking to me.
Yeah,
yeah. So, but it was a lot of fun, and that's the main thing.
Yeah, hell yeah. I think you. Like, what was your final score?
6-3
Yeah. 7-2 Some went in, some went out, right? Like,
yeah.
Some 7-2 went in, yeah.
Yeah. Any idea how good your tiebreakers would have been?
It would have been okay. We ran into, like, one issue where the team we played on the first day, and this is an interesting thing. So the team we played on the first day, after we lost them, the next day, their coach came into our team and he was like, yeah, we were really happy. We went 3. Well, actually, they went 2-1 because they lost to Toronto Defiant. But they were like, yeah, we think we can go far. But like 3 of our players can't play for the next 2 days. So I'm like, that would really hurt your tiebreaker if they end up doing poorly throughout the rest of the tournament. But they beat you at the start.
Yeah.
Our tiebreakers would have been okay. I think almost two teams of the teams we lost to make groups. So Daybreak in North America, in Group A, that was one of the teams we lost to. They had a phenomenal Ashe player who just like destroyed us.
And what's the other team?
The other team we played was called Aardvark. They were quite good, but I think we could have won those two matches. Obviously, you're always going to say that, but sure. Two of the matches we lost were winnable. Just some mistakes here and there.
Did it kind of like reignite? Did it feel a little nostalgic going back to like, you know, Fnatic and, you know, getting back out there and competing?
I think anyone who's ever played in a full team environment, regardless of what rank you are, will tell you it's just how Overwatch should be played. That's why people fell in love with Overwatch. And that's why people are like, I miss the good old days. It's like, yeah, you miss the good old days when you had 6 or 5 friends playing 100% of the time and everyone was trying their heart out, right? Because that's how Overwatch should be played. Like, even if you aren't the best, even if you're going to lose, just playing with friends, communicating, competing, and feeling like there's actual meaningful impact for like trying and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That it makes me feel young again. It actually brings me back to my youth. As much as I'm not that old, it brings me back to my youth.
I feel like that's the, there is, and I feel like Riot's kind of doing this and Activision Blizzard has done this with other titles, but there's a part of me that hopes that Overwatch gets its own little like automated tournament series. You know, like I think
Faceit does that, right?
Right. Yeah, obviously, Faceit can do that, but it's like, are you going to get a mass amount of people to get off client? Like, if they could integrate that in the client to be able to launch that through the game, that would be fantastic. But as we all know, adding those extra steps, you're just like alienating so many people.
No, we're lucky we got Faceit, but like
come on, man.
You know, we're barely even crawling right now. We're not going to ask for the sun. You know,
it is far reaching. It is like a horizon set goal. That's just like, man, wouldn't it be so cool if that's the kind of energy for sure.
100%.
It does 100%. Feel pretty wild though that like I played Warcraft 3 as like a semi professional in like. I think 2005-04, we had replays, okay? We had in-game tournament clients. Yes, our esports broadcasts were Winamp streams, right? Like, but we had those two features. Valorant doesn't have a replay system. Like, we don't have in-game tournaments, you know? Like,
What is the reason for that? Why don't we have replay systems these days? Because that is an old thing that was always available. Right? Like, how did we lose it? Is it just too much data these days?
Maybe. It comes down
to how the replays actually function, because I think in games like, I think this is how it works in some of the RTS games, the replays are actually the computer replaying the game that you played. So it's actually going through and inputting all of the same.
Oh, so it's just data that's an input. I
believe. So it's how they actually function, and it's not just like a video of the game. It's actually the computer going through and re-inputting everything. So it's, I would imagine that's probably at the crux of like how replays work.
That makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, yes, they store all the information, but it's also like a value thing, right? Like now that every person's graphics card has like an inbuilt like capture system, right? Mm-hmm. And everyone can make clips. Dude, if I wanted to do that in 2005, I would have to like smash my print screen button, you know, very quickly to generate.
Oh, God damn it.
Create little GIFs of everything, yeah.
So like replays actually had some utility. I remember like there were, I actually for a while, like I volunteered for a website called replayers.com. And one of the things I did was like write little summaries for the best replays of the week. I remember like, you know, Grubby against like Mad Frog, like look at this crazy strategy. And that like replays used to be a huge thing during that time, right? Now, like all of that is just like completely different. Now it needs to be like, you know, like even frag movies are dead, to be honest. Like it's all about like little clips, Twitch clips, sharing those. And it's just a path of technology that I think like it the dev time is just better spent on making a better game for the most part. The thing that I will say is what is a little strange is it cannot be that different than an Observer client, right? Like I think the problem is that like the companies just say, okay, we don't need to polish as hard for observers as for a consumer product. So we can just tell the observers, like, work around that. If you do that, that produces a glitch. While for replay clients, you have to tell the programmers, okay, this is a no-go. We don't want, you know, customers to break our client in some way, right? So I think it's just probably a time value difference from day, right?
100%.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Replay viewers don't make money, right? It's skins and it's all those, you know. So
they want it,
that's true.
And then they don't use it. Yeah, like it's like everything. It's like the Overwatch, the Overwatch League replay viewer. It's like the kind of
so
thing where
good,
everyone's like,
man.
Everyone's like, it's so valuable. And for us, it's our livelihood, right? So it's like matters. There's three of us, okay?
Yeah,
the average viewer says they would love to be able to go check it out, but they don't. Like, and they don't install. Yeah. Like, I would love to have known even when the replay viewer was at its like. Most functional and working, how many people actually ever logged on to use it? I don't think it would be many. So it's like, why would the devs put time into it?
100%. And to expand on that, I wonder how, at what number or like what price point would Blizzard actually have to price that at to create it, to make it at least break even, you know, where it was like, okay, you know, the all access pass back in the day, you know, nobody used it. It was still a paid product. And even then, nobody used it.
At some point,
would that kind of even itself, you know?
I hope at some point someone comes forward that was involved in that project, because like I heard wild things in how ambitious Twitch was in trying to get like, you know, their subscribers and what kind of products they were planning and whatnot. Like a major part of the value proposition of like the 90 million deal was these paid services, right? Like Twitch does not have any direct products they monetize other than like Turbo or whatever, right? And that like if had that popped off, that would have been major. They would have actually had a product for esports that they could have sold, right? The thing is, they probably had some, you know, like consumer research data where just like people just like non-committally click yes, of course I would use this
100%.
Once again, complete horseshit. Like fucking what's it called, preference falsification. Eric can already not like hear me say this anymore, but there's a guy that like an economist that developed like this concept of preference falsification. Like, Private Truth, Public Lies was the book, which is basically like everyone fucking lies, right? Like, everyone fucking lies about their consumer behavior. Everyone hates Nick Soto. These fuckers get billions of clicks every day, okay? Like, they're giving you actually what you want. Like, you're all clicking.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's this is just, unfortunately, will forever be the case. I think, Kasa, you also know, like, why is there not more analysis? Yes, we like analysis because I'm so bright, big brain. Then actual analysis with, like, fucking big brain discussions about thingies. Yeah, I guess I'll take a leak right here or I will tune out. Like, I'm watching, I'm watching XQC instead, you know? Like.
Yeah, well, it's like people always wonder, it's like, why don't people do like analytical contests or like replay stuff like I do? It's like, because there's kind of an upper limit on how many people are going to watch that. It's not scalable in a big way. There is a very limited people who want to go back and watch a replay with high level analysis. There's a reason why, you know, it's like the argument, and we get in this little circle jerk in competitive Overwatch and top end competitive where people are like, people just don't want to be entertained. They just want to hear the smartest person on the broadcast tell you exactly what's happening on the screen. And the reality is, that's not what brings the interest. Case, and that's not the case. That's not what the majority of the viewer base wants. That's what us at the upper echelon want. So I think there's like, as you said, it's easy to think that what we want, and if you just look at competitive Overwatch, what we want, wouldn't that be good for the game and the competitive Overwatch? At the end of the day, the answer is probably no in the grand scheme of things.
And that may change. That's something that we've kind of talked about on the show as, you know, we transition from Overwatch League veteran fans to, you know, whatever the OWCS wants to, you know, morph into and become and cultivate. You know, that could change. That percentage could change. But I think the vast majority of esports fans and just consumers of content digitally are pretty much here to be entertained at some level, whether it's just full on entertainment. I need to like laugh 100% of the time via Jinxie or XQC or whatever like hot streamers out there right now, or get into, you know, some of the more interesting little, you know, finer minutia things that, you know, a game like Overwatch can kind of produce. Hopefully, you know, maybe that changes. We'll have to see.
Also, like, that was one thing that actually pissed me off when Uncoachable talked about it during the Kanba episode. Not to throw shade on any of the British islands, but like this take that basically like every season that the worst broadcaster should be publicly decapitated for the worst casting.
Do
you guys understand that you guys actually do not really have input on what like you want to do with the broadcast? You probably also just look at like consumer data on what they like. They somehow spit out like wholesome content or a less elaborate tone is much better. Like. And it isn't actually about, like, you know, 9K-ing it. Dude, like, let's be honest. I am right now watching 9K. I do not give a flying shit about his English as long as I can understand it. But I also realize that enjoying 9K might as well be a test for the DSM-5 in diagnosing neurodivergence, okay? Like, this is not a regular experience. Most of it will be vibes and entertainment, right? And it's not, like, necessarily understanding how something worked that will give you the good hormones, okay?
Yep. That's true.
I think there's a big thing here to be said as well. It's like, I think there's a lot of people who get frustrated with, you know, and this is something that, it's funny because I went through the whole spectrum of this. When I was a pro player, didn't give a shit about the desk and the casters because I had the same thing of, I was like, these guys don't really know what they're talking about. They're entertaining, you know, like I enjoy it and I love those guys, but it's not for me. As a pro player, their product is not built for me.
It's a mature view.
Yeah, and that's it. And over time, I learned it's like, it's not just about analysis, this thing. There needs to be an entertainment level, and it's about baking that in together. That's what makes the best, you know, broadcasters the best, right? The reason people watch Inside the NBA is not because Chuck's a Hall of Famer who just talks about the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
Because he's funny as fuck to listen to, right? And he can do both. And I think people don't give enough credit for the Overwatch talent that we've come through the spear in a very long time. You know, you see Soey, you see Mitch, they're instantly going and they're crushing it in Valorant. You know, Soey is doing, I believe she just won an award for Game Hers Award.
Yeah. Yep.
Necra also just won a Game Hers Award. You might not like them, but they are some of the best in the business at what 100%. They do, right? And I don't think people give them enough love. And I think it's easy to be like, they don't understand the game at the highest level and the minutia, right? That's why Jake's on the broadcast, right? Just go listen to Jake and ignore the others. And like that's the content that you want to consume, right?
Yep.
And I think, as you said, I think that uncoachable take, especially when they were talking about, you know, the Hunger Games version of casting, is like, is not fair. And once again, I can understand their perspective, but the broadcast is not meant for them. These guys are some of the smartest people in the Overwatch competitive space. Don't watch the broadcast then.
What I will say is, I think I still expect that the tone, I understand why you want to keep the tone very PG-12, right? Like, not only is Overwatch, you know, accessible to those in terms of like the age limitation, so you can feasibly go to a Disney network and say, oh, our game is accessible for 13-year-olds, so we will only use language and like framing that is appropriate. CS is unencumbered, for instance, by that. The game is only accessible at 18, right?
Yep.
Like, I recently saw, like, did you guys see the Dust clip where he just like drops F-bombs live on broadcast, even PGL that are usually, you know, PG in terms of like how they frame it? Like, they just go all in because they can, right? Like, that's their demographic. I think the sponsors that they've attracted are fine with that type of tone. It's also more European esports generally, so like the sensitivities are different anyway. I will say, I think the success of co-streaming kind of shows us that this demographic is also more into that. And I wish, like, I understand that you can't, given that your monetization model, but I feel like you now have to sort of pivot to a monetization model where it can't just be about sponsors that only want the PG-13 content, but that actually, like, you know, want a legitimate representation, an authentic representation of what people, you know, Zoomers would be talking about, the language that they use, gremlin out, like crouched on their, like feet on their seat, basically.
Yeah.
Gremlin moding and talking about video games, right? I think if that had been more of the tone and had that developed into that, I expect that this is probably something that more people liked. And I will also say that even among a hardcore crowd, the way Uncoachable exploded, I think they're way closer to what the core audience wants in terms of tone than anything else, right?
I agree.
So, like, I think we should have... I understand why we couldn't, but that definitely, now that it's an open format, I hope that is explored in terms of the tonality of the broadcast and of the discussion. And honestly, I totally see that if that isn't covered, then we will either have established talent outside like you just dominate in terms of co-streaming because they provide that tone, or we'll have some cracked out Zoomer that will like hopefully we will find in some way. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Jinxie.
Mm-hmm.
He's not necessarily involved in R6 esports, but like he's a competitive player in Rainbow Six, and it seems like that guy by himself revived that interest in that game, right? And I hope we get like someone with that energy to bring back it interest and really develop like a co-streaming culture around it to talk about Overwatch, to make it cool again in some way, right? Because a lot of it feels just like it's wholesome, but like all the vibe, you know, like think about the streamers that we had. There was so much personality initially here. Tinder Tatman, even Poke, right? Like XQC. These guys had like character that was somehow tied to the brand. And I hope like we can really like find that again and also kind of show to upper level management that that is the tone this game wants to be broadcast in, or rather the tone that this audience wants to be entertained, because I think that's much more accurate to what kind of entertainment people of that demographic enjoy.
I think that's kind of why co-streaming is valuable, because especially when you open it up to anybody, is because people can watch the vibe that they want to watch the broadcast with, right? There are some people who want to watch Avaaz talk about cannibalism while in the middle of a match, right? That's you know, he's sort of our different look. And that's the thing about Uncoachable, right? If you want to go watch hard-hitting analysis of them really breaking shit down as it happens, go watch their broadcast, right? I know Commander X has been doing scrims recently.
That's not the draw, though, right? Like, it's the mudslinging. It's the it's the gladiatorial arena of like blood sports.
And you know that, like, that's Uncoachable's big pull, right? And people got frustrated with them, and I think they actually took a little bit of flack with the recent episodes where it's like they're trying to. It's the Dexerto issue where it's like everyone says they hate Dexerto, but then everyone goes to the fucking article and reads it and then talks about it, right? And that's what Uncoachable was doing very early on with their thing. That's what they said about the casters. That's what they said about, you know, the Korean players. Like, they were very critical of Korean players and, like, the culture wars that they had within their teams and stuff. And then they sort of clickbait the title because people aren't going to watch it. They're just going to read the title and then they're going to get mad about it. And that's why people were talking about it. Like, you can be mad at them for doing that stuff, but at the end of the day, it got everyone talking about it and it got, you know, their opinions out there. So it's like, I don't blame them at all. As I said, I don't like towing that line because I like being a good boy on the internet, and I don't like people saying mean things about me. So I try and talk careful line, but it's entertainment. And I think if it gets people talking, then, you know, and there's a part of the internet that wants that.
Look, like, that's true. I even think that you don't have to necessarily go into, you know, the Korean stuff and whatever. That, I agree, that's a little far. We on this, like, on this podcast have greatly enjoyed when you went in on the Washington Justice back in the day, for instance. Like, I think you can even attract or like eke out that type of dopamine by just telling people their shit when they're shit, you know.
When it's rightfully, you know, you got to wield it carefully, but it's true.
We've gotten in a lot of trouble for doing that in the past. And the reason I did that, and there was a chance that I was going to get a message from my boss's boss who was going to be like, hey, you can't say that about teams because Washington Justice came to us in a complaint. There have been teams that have complained to us throughout my 3 years, especially on the desk, this happens. They say, you guys are being too mean to this team. Or like, this team has complained that you guys are talking too negatively about this player or this team. And that's the things that the fans don't see.
No.
Is that sometimes when we have been critical, there was pushback. And that was the issue with the Overwatch League, right? Yep. So much red tape. The teams have the ability, because they're a franchise team, to be able to say, hey, this isn't fair. We don't want this to happen, right? And I'm not going to name names of who those teams are. Washington Justice didn't do that after my rant. But there's a reason why people don't go out on a limb and say those kind of things. And that's also the reason why, you know, it's the Uncoachable idea of like being very critical of teams and players. They're like, I think they're just too soft. I don't think they analyze too much. It's like, well, sometimes we were really just held back on what we were able to say.
I think like when that happened to Boston, that was actually season six. That was actually quite admirable how they dealt with it. They like, at least for a brief period of time, they just took on the villain role. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's the best thing that you can do. I had hoped that like behind the scenes, eventually folks just realize that like there has to be a push and pull. Like, it cannot only all everything be positive. You know, there's a system in Germany where you cannot talk negatively about employees in their employee evaluation. Now, you know what happened is, there are now code words that developed where, for instance, he did he regularly did his duties is a codified word for 70% of the time.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and the, you know, it's like it just moves upwards, right? Like, and I feel like there's just such an arms race where that it just shouldn't have happened. I think like this was one of the more damaging cultural issues in the Overwatch League, and yeah, I'm not sure if it was the first instance, but I definitely remember the whole Flame fiasco and whatnot back in the day. To be fair, he even went to discuss it. He had a little bit more balls than folks just doing it behind the scenes. But like, I think the best a commissioner could have done is just to tell the teams, I will talk to my broadcast team and go to the broadcast team, keep doing it. It's getting the numbers, right? And in the end, the owners would have said, oh, I guess we're getting numbers. What do we care, right? Yeah. I think you can absolutely sell a bad boy brand as well. If anything, like esports currently, if you look at the teams that are doing the best or seemingly are doing the headlines, are the G2s, are the Sentinels of the world that have that 50% of them being perceived as arrogant, as like too much, like cocky, whatnot, right? I think like this pressure definitely, that's one thing that the owners definitely have to take on the nose as an issue that they had and they facilitated, because like in the end it is about competition. It is not, it's not just, you know, like handshake sportsmanship that sells tickets, right?
It's true. It's true. And I think that even goes back even further, like looking at like how EG, you know, in the 2010s, how they were marketed. You know, they didn't have the best players. Like, let's be frank. They didn't have a ton of great players, but the way that they marketed them was very successful.
I remember watching Adrian Starkov too. Exactly. Back in the day. Yeah. I love watching him. He wasn't the best by any means, but he was entertaining as hell.
It was
like the Artesian Dota 2 as well, right?
It's just how, what, using what you have, and like really, and this sounds really cliche, but it's leaning into it. Just like how Boston did, you know, if they could have, you know, if in a different universe where they had more resources, maybe, you know, that even goes further and they have more of a marketing presence in that way.
Mobile MVP.
Yeah, he's at the love the Magenta Club out there. The boy howdy. I love me some draft. Shout outs to Miro. Anyways, Costa, in the final couple moments that we've still got you. I do want to kind of ask you about the NA side of the group stage.
Okay.
We've got some big shakeups. We've got some big names. I'll hit you with the easy question first. Give me like the top two or three teams that you're kind of tapping as like tournament favorites. Obviously teams like Toronto Defiant, M80, Maryville, some faces that people are going to recognize. Is that possibly the top three, or is there maybe some sneaky teams in there?
I think M80 is an interesting one, especially because it's like people look at it and they're like, oh, wow. Well, like obviously Toronto Defiant, I think Toronto Defiant by far the favorites. They have the infrastructure. Okay. They have this pre-existing synergy. They're ranked one. And I think you saw that in the Swiss stage. I think they went 9-0, not even close. I think they played WD40 and like 2-0'd them in like 15 minutes or something like that. Wow. Like, and it wasn't close. But M80 is like, this is a team that came together last second. Mm-hmm. I think you run into a big issue that Pelican and Spectra, one of them's playing on high ping. So that could be kind of difficult. So like, I think M80 will be a really good team, but you know, this team was put together with duct tape and the seat of their pants because like of everything that happened in NA going into it. And then like, there are some good teams, but for me, I think this is like Toro Define is like so far above everyone else that I don't think it's going to be competitive. If anything, and I've said this on stream, I actually think the European region has more teams that will be competitive with Toronto Defiant. I think NA is very top heavy, while I think Europe has at least like four or five teams that I think are going to be more competitive. And you saw that in the Swiss stage.
And I think that's the ultimate. I feel like when we talk to some of the fans, the most memorable games are those super close ones. It's not like that high level Overwatch. It's not was it close? Was it dramatic? Yeah. Did it go all five games? Was there a tiebreaker? You know, that's the stuff that people tend to remember, right?
Did anyone talk about Toronto Defiant throughout the entire Swiss stage? Sure, they were 9-0, but they booty bopped everyone to the point that it's like, well, what does it even matter at this point, right?
Mm-hmm. It's a sad realization, but
look,
you know,
far be it for me to be a Scrimbucks warrior, when I lie, but I watched M80 against Toronto Defiant, and of course, like I don't think like Toronto Define was necessarily trying, but man, Hog was clapping someone's cheeks in those scrims that I saw. Like Hog is currently like doing very well on those heroes. So I agree that like there's, it's not great with the folks on ping, and yes, they don't necessarily have to play both Koreans, right? Like Hydron is still there, but I'm not sure if they're bringing them over. From what I could gather, like I have an interview that will probably be out by the time you get to hear this podcast. And McGravy said that they, like MAT was one of the best deals around, basically, right? Like, and I'm not sure if they're capable of bringing someone like Pelican over, but be that as it may, I think that's, yeah, definitely like for me, the second best roster. I think they just, basically, when the card house of NA fell, they just grabbed the best pieces and ran. With the exception of, I think Hydron over Seeker is probably a mistake.
Yeah, I agree. I think we can all agree. I think Seeker has potentially a hotter like prospect, and he's more lightning in a bottle. Especially because like Hydron has been a part of like a lot of those teams that have like fallen short. I don't know if that is on Hydron. Like, I think Hydron's a phenomenal player. I think you can make arguments for both, but I think I agree this M80 team is the team I expect to probably be number two, right? Like, I don't... Sure. WD40, I don't see them consistently staying at number two. I think this is a good team. I think they could be the third NA seed that comes through, but I would assume M80 is going to be number two when it comes to it.
Climbing the ranks, some explosive. Yes, that was a pun. You know, things possibly happening in NA. Last one for you, Custa, before I get you out of here. Yes, that's my alarm. Forgive me, audio listeners. Meta-wise, we were talking prior to the show, you're looking at Korea, they're doing a lot of Doom. Skimming through some of the scrims that Commander X had posted, and maybe some of those time breaker games, we are seeing a little bit more of like a slower kind of like pokey, like Ramattra, Sigma stuff on certain maps, on certain sides. Is that something that you think is going to be very NA-centric? Is that something that you think is going to persist, maybe even going into EU? Like, where do you kind of think about the meta right now?
I think right now, North America is very Junker Queen-pilled. Like, so one thing's for sure. Everyone's going to play Lucio Tracer pretty much everywhere. That will be the staple. So it's what you're building around that. Some teams are playing, as you said, I think the Doomfist works very well against the Junker Queen. I think if you play it well and you push the Queen around, the Queen just ends up standing around, not able to do anything. So that's why I think in the Asian region, you're seeing more Doomfists, is because they have great Doomfist players, right? They're like, they have more consistent great Doomfist players that they can counter. But then you have teams like Falcons who are like, well, we don't want to play Doomfist. We're going to play the D.Va counter dive to your Doomfist, right? So they're playing like a dive and counter dive, while NA's just like, we run forward as a unit. We zug with Queen, and then we hope for the best. You're seeing a little bit more diversity in Europe, I feel like. Like, they play Ramattra, they play some Queen, they, like, mix things up. Like, Europe is kind of all over the place. But the one thing that's coolest, in my opinion, about the Swiss stage that I played is that I don't think I played against a single team that played the exact same thing. Yes, they are iterations of the same. Everyone's playing Lucio Tracer, but some teams like to play Ashe hitscan. Some teams like to play Genji. Some teams like to play Echo. Some teams like to play the Ramattra instead of the Queen. So there are little iterations on every single thing. And right now, I don't think there is this composition is the best. I remember I watched Toronto Defiant playing, and they were playing like something fucking, they were playing Wrecking Ball still at certain points.
Oh, okay.
So they're just sort of doing whatever, like, it's very up in the air, and there is no one composition fits all across the meta.
I love
right
that.
Now.
That's so, so good. Any thoughts there, Yiska?
I think it would be interesting to see how metas develop now, because the reinforcement mechanism was sort of like everyone has like these enclosed scrim circles, and it kind of travels that way, right? And like professionalized teams figure out what works, and then there's some argument from authority where, like, if you know, Dallas Fuel plays it, I guess it's good.
Sure.
So, like, I think that will probably be less so the case, especially during all the Swiss stages. And then I think even this group stage will see it considerably less than beforehand. So we will have some more diversity based on that there. It will be interesting to see if that holds up throughout the competition as we go into the second group stage and then also into the LAN finals. And then, not to be underestimated, as we knew from evolutionary biology, like the separation of species or of, like, you know, co-emergent, that's the wrong word, but like basically like different colonies figuring out how to interact with each other, like the separation of ping really lends itself to different metas. And then once we clash there, it also will really depend on what the structure will be during those offline matches. Yeah. Like, will teams arrive early? Will some teams have the ability to boot camp? I think, like, it's especially considering it's like we've seen that Twisted Minds has the resources to facilitate that for their team. They boot camped in Korea, sure. I think. Yep. I assume Falcons has the resources to bring their team over to the US. How will that transform the meta if they, I don't know, arrive 2 weeks early? They will probably inform the meta in some heavy way, right? But we're now once again figuring out what the meta game of the scrim meta will be and how that knowledge is going to be disseminated. Because I assume, like, with waning resources, people will just hit the ground, hit the tarmac, and start playing in the tournaments for a vast majority of cases. And that actually has a lot of upset potential as well. Yeah. I think even a team like Falcons is not necessarily warded. Like, you can only build up antibodies against certain meta comps if you've been exposed to them, right? Like, you might be able to, via the better, you know, visibility of, like, scrimbots and everything, to mRNA vaccine your way out of their solutions. But you don't know if that survives.
I don't believe you at this point. I feel like you have a word bank that Eric or maybe even some of the Discord members have prompted you to try to fit in as many buzzwords. It's getting a little too crazy. Custa, we thank you so much for your time. Anything you quickly want to plug before we get you out of here?
Overwatch will be back next stage. It's gonna be fun. I'm gonna be co-streaming a lot of the matches that are going on. I'm excited. Like, I agree with Yiska. I think one of the coolest things that will come out of this is this happens in League of Legends, this happens in any sort of region. The metas do exist, and when you have less resources and there's not as long a boot camps, it just becomes which region's meta or which region's style ends up being the best. It's going to be a rock, paper, scissors. Maybe for all we know, Europe might not have better teams, but when the Koreans come up and play against the European teams, they don't have an answer to them in a short amount of time. So I'm excited for that. I think it provides regional pride, and I think that's what OWCS is all about. It's not as much World Cup, but it's like regional cup of the world, and you get to cheer for your region. I'm an NA fan, even though it's a fucking shit show in here. To the moon, let's go.
Base, thank you again, Custa, for coming in and chatting for a little bit. I know you got to get out of here. We're gonna chat a little bit longer, but thank you again. Appreciate
thanks,
you
guys. Thanks for having thanks, me thank on. You. And yes. Until next time. Yep.
All right. Before you go full Darwin, I do need to support the people who do make us fit and strong and right to possibly make more content, and that's Battle Cry, Refine, Bean, Bronze, Babu, Hal, Picasso, Lotion, Parkship, Sammy, Rock, Rex, Zane, Volumel, and Sugar High, RMDRW, Brother Adam L, Ice M, Jello, Fireman 6, and AK. Thank you so much. I didn't forget about you, I promise. I know Eric put that up on the screen.
I'm going to be honest. I'm currently having, like, this phenomenon where, like, as a wee German lad, I used to hear words in, like, you know, Eminem songs or whatever. I didn't actually know how they were spelled. And this is how I feel about those names right now. Like, I never really thought about how IMDRW is spelled. Or that I thought Brother Adam L were one person. This is wild to me.
Yeah, no, separate people.
Damn.
Crazy, huh?
Crazy.
Crazy. Yes, I totally agree. I didn't want to completely cut you off, but I, you know, I had to get cussed out of here. I do think that, you know, the way that metas are going to develop is its own, like, documentary series, right? We went from, at the beginning of the Overwatch League, everybody in LA scrimming against each other. Everything was the same majority of the time, right? There was very few, like, characteristics from team to team. Everybody was kind of, like, in agreement that this is what's good and this is everything else is shit and don't play it. As we separated into the COVID era, things got a little bit more open. You know, the Asian region had its own bubble. The NA region had its own bubble. as we continue to progress, we start to really kind of galvanize and cement the idea that maybe it's about styles. We get teams like London Spitfire getting stronger and stronger and leaning farther into like the Ryan stuff. And we do get more of these stylistic teams. I would imagine that that probably continues to evolve the game as we get farther and farther out in, you know, the tentacles of, you know, Faceit's little system, and the OWCS is attracting more and more open talent. You know, people are coming in with their own ideas. They have to figure out how to get to the group stage, so that inherently kind of points you in a direction already where, you know, you can't just play what everybody else is playing, because sometimes that just isn't going to work for you. If you have to win a certain number of games to make it out of the Swiss stage, you can't just play what's good if that's just losing you games. So it's already kind of pointing you in the direction, right? The system is already pointing and shaping the meta. So it's going to be entirely very fascinating to see how this system changes the game in a competitive sense, not like Team 4, but, you know, it is an evolution for sure.
I will say what I also realized watching these first-person streams is, like, individual skill will once again shine in these, you know, less sophisticated strategical environments. Like, it's not just that even teams that are very coordinated, like SS Space Station Gaming are, it's, like, they also now have less well-coordinated practice partners, and that will also impact their level in turn, right? Like, as the pressure lowers, like, they will improve less. I will say, I had an experience watching Fanny Astro, like, play against what are they called? The Kefsta team?
Let me pull it up.
Whatever their name is, right?
Ubo, like, Spray Check.
Yeah, like I was watching that, and I had a feeling when I watched. Do you know the movie Gravity with Sandra Bullock?
I've heard of it. I know what you're talking
about.
Sandra
Bullock and George Clooney. Okay, we're in outer space, and there's a scenario where, and I watched it in IMAX, and Sandra Bullock is in her spacesuit, and she gets flown or thrown out of the space station and just like flies around disconnected from the space station into outer space. And I weirdly, given that she's now within the physical realm of infinity, right? She's in space. My brain went, oh my God, claustrophobia. Okay. Watching Fanny Astro get sprinted at by Kefsta gave me that feeling. This boy is fucking crazy with it. Like, it's unlike anything else in that region, the pressure that Kefsta is just able to exude by himself. Like, the amount of time Sparker was just, like, getting donked on by Kefsta is fucking nuts. This boy is different. And like, I think, like, especially given that most of those freaks have now been locked away in Korea, right? Like, I think, like, that will maybe... Kefsta, like, you want as many Kefsta scrims as you can get if you want to have any chance against Korean squads.
Sure,
because,
of course.
Like, it feels like nobody else in that region is even remotely... Like, okay, I'm not talking shit about Twisted Minds. I think that's also a fair shout. But, like, it's, like, Overwatch League traces are different. Like, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I'm not sure if North America has one of those.
I would be willing to bet that it's going to be very difficult to. Well, okay, I want to approach this from in a very particular way, because I think you set up something very poignant that I don't know that very many people are like thinking about actively. With the import restrictions, obviously you can only import so many players, meaning that talent that probably could have floated in the past is now going to look like head and shoulders. So it's going to like inflate a lot of these players that probably have been deserving of like the praise that they've gotten. Obviously, Kevster is a generational talent, but it's only going to like further his impact because of how little competition he really has. Same thing when it comes to someone. Same, like any of those big talent, those big name talents are going to look, they're literally going to pale in comparison to their peers. It's going to be transformational. That being said, when you look at NA, there isn't like a ton of like specifically tracer specialists that really leap off the page. I think a lot of people will point probably towards Rocket on Team Timeless, I believe. Hopefully that's correct. I know that roster mania has been going on, so hopefully Liquipedia is correct. Yep. He was definitely somebody that impressed me in the Pro-Am, and it's somebody that, you know, Contenders Talent always was pointing towards as, you know, somebody to kind of keep an eye on. I know that Maryville did finish 7th, but I do think they're going to be like fairly competitive when it comes to those top seeded teams. I think them versus M80 or Defiant is not necessarily going to just be a complete stomp, even though I probably would favor, you know, former Owl Talent over, you know, Dante and, you know, the young guys. But I do think it's important to like really emphasize the fact that, you know, we are going to see some new names, but the names that have existed prior to and probably were like middling in the Overwatch League era will probably look insane in comparison to some of the teams out there. It really is going to be interesting to see how the community reacts to that.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree. I think it's also like just an opportunity to get its own, like,
yeah,
the delusion. If the separation, and we only have like 2 or 3 meeting points each year, right?
Yep.
As it currently stands, there's something to be said about North Americans and to a lesser extent Europeans getting to soak into their own delusion that they can fuck with the Korean boys. But it's also, there's also something to be said about, you know, maybe someone can step up and maybe Tracer isn't the end all be all and someone develops something else. Rush definitely. I think what Christopher said in stating like they have beaten way better teams than that have been currently formed in the OWCS is definitely true, right? Like, they have some, their trophy case in the Overwatch League was fucking incredible. And arguably, they've only gotten better with recruiting Astro, right? So it's going to be interesting looking forward how matters develop. And maybe there is something to be said about, like, other regions just getting to explore their own synchronicities and that actually succeeding if you let it, you know, bubble and cook enough without the pressures of the now and just the now of that particular region, where at the end what you cooked over 3 months of isolation is actually competitive to the other region or South Korea specifically. And keep in mind they also only have 2 slots, right? So there's even less opportunity for them to just bonk you, and the likelihood of, you know, like, we already know Europe RNA is going to have 2 of the semi-final slots in Dallas, right? So that's good. And then, we'll see how that develops. It's going to be exciting. I think the artificial separation will help, but the downside, of course, also is that it did force retirements, that it did lower the quality across the board.
100%, yeah.
And we'll see how that develops. But yeah, it's now about making an entertainment product first and foremost in order to have any chance in hell for organizations to come back. And secondly, for Blizzard to finally define where the revenue streams are coming from. The nebulous term of like crowdsourcing prize pools during those majors does not help if you don't know how much effort they're putting into these skins, right?
Yep.
And it's also like, I think given those monetization issues, it's probably fair for organizations to ask for a bit bigger prize pool cut this time around if those crowdsourcing endeavors are really only contributing towards the prize pool and not directly to the teams like they would in Valorant, like they would in CS. And I do hope that the pressure that the other titles are putting on, arguably, I think Valorant will set a new record with their capsules coming up. I think there's an argument to be made that maybe this major in CS will like maybe get close to the 33 million that they got through Paris. We'll see if that gets close. Okay. And then rightfully, even within the marketing team or the sales team, people will say, wait, why does that work in other esports and not in ours? And that's when the incentives are created from a business side to create these products that hopefully are a win-win for teams, for players, and for the developers as well.
Ideally, that's the case. Hopefully, you know, I think you established the fact that, you know, Overwatch did not have very fertile soil, but had a lot of great farm equipment and had a lot of resources to try to terraform the land to make it into something that maybe it was never really meant to be. However, OWCS is in the complete reverse of that. Not a lot of resources, but the ground itself feels far more tillable, right? You have the inherent drama of going through an open circuit. You have the inherent like tribalism. Once we get to LAN, you have NA teams, EU teams, Asian teams. Everybody gets to root for their representatives, right? That's going to draw viewers. On top of that, you have active crowdfunding that we didn't necessarily have in the past because it was a closed circuit system, right? All of this should point us towards growth. It's just collecting that, you know, critical mass to kind of spin that up. Ideally, that becomes the case. And ideally, we get to that future where we can be, you know, the CS generating 33 million a LAN, you know, a major, what every like quarter year.
Let's be honest. The resources committed, as currently signaled by Blizzard, are like a Googleplex less than what Blizzard is
100%.
Or more rather than what Blizzard is committing to this endeavor, yeah. Right? Like, yeah. And that if that esports wants to have a chance in hell is impossible. I like during the interview with Adam Adamu. That has been out for a while, but I think, by the way, criminally underrated interview, probably the best interview that we will get on the future of Overwatch esports. Not many folks watched it, but like he basically said, if eventually there is no partnership agreement between teams in this scene and Blizzard Entertainment, the developers specifically, there's just nothing to be said, right? Like, it is patently clear now that for this period of esports, there's no monetization or no way out unless the developer realizes, acknowledges, and shows through action that esports is a part of the marketing or the PR of that game. It provides that value, and therefore it's only right that incentive structures are set for the teams that are creating content for you and value for you. And companies like Riot Games mostly have acknowledged that. I think that Valve ran its tests. It's maybe less true for Dota. It's definitely more true for CS based on the numbers that we're seeing. How that happens is whatever, right? Like if it's through skin gambling, blah blah blah.
Sure,
gambling is part of the esports system as well, right? Maybe also critically underserved market in Overwatch as well, especially also looking at the Morgan Stanley report, where like that was a significant part of the revenue was around sports betting that never actually actualized in this, especially around fantasy. They never put out a fantasy product that was at all intriguing. I think that's the only way forward, and it needs to signal this soon, or it's dead on arrival.
that's what's difficult. We've kind of talked about it in the past that there is such little. We are seeing, and this is obviously a big piece of news, you know, we are seeing some organizations, you know, become interested. Obviously, M80 is like a relatively small esports organization. They've picked up a team, Space Station Gaming, again, not a gigantic team, but have put their, you know, ticket in the hat of the OWCS. We have some Saudi Arabian organizations spinning up and collecting, you know, teams. It is, to look at it from that business point of view, it is difficult with how early this is, right?
But I will say, here's the thing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Blizzard has not given any signals. There are
agreed.
A few bolts left in the market. I would say it's only the Toronto Defiant. The rest of the orcs, rightfully, like there are endemic esports orcs currently probing the market. They're going through these teams and they're saying, sell me on Overwatch. The only thing that you can say is maybe it's going to be at Esports World Cup.
Yeah.
And that's the selling point, and there's nada after that.
Yep. Okay? As it stands now.
And I think, like, in that, it's probably also underappreciating a little bit what organizations bring to the circuit, right? Like, to completely disregard them and hope that the grassroots movement will move the needle is probably just not correct, right? Like, there have to be solutions that work in tandem. And even if it's just like a lot more attention or dev hours into esports virtual items, that might just be enough. Assure teams that maybe if you finish X, Y, and Z, you get like some representation there, and you get revenue share there, and then you can sell it in some way. You know, make that something that works. Like, make it incentive structures that, like, where others have to contribute in some meaningful way and are incentivized to help you promote this, right? As it stands, it's just like, it's basically the esports NFT, okay? You're trying to sell a product on a maybe participation in a very controversial system that you're not even sure of will to participate in. Yeah. And like you're trying to like read into future gains and buying low and therefore establishing and hopefully getting to sell high and what, and that's exactly the type of owner that you're now attracting as well.
You are
attracting NFT owners,
money.
Okay? Like, it's not dumb
money
necessarily, but it's a gambling money, right? And that will necessarily also like shape the nature of the culture of this. Right.
Yep.
And you don't want to have this fester too much. Otherwise, like this culture entrenches and it will neuroticize the scene. Right.
Agreed.
With people fearing for their jobs, fearing to be fucked over by people that rug pull, you know, out, do not pay salaries, whatnot. They haven't arrived
just
yet.
Wait. Yeah. They're coming in every esport. If you weren't here during pre-Overwatch League, you're going to experience it this year. Some team somewhere is going to be like, hey, my org didn't pay me this week. What gives? It's going to happen.
Yeah.
When you talk about partnerships with the developer, you're obviously a little bit closer to the ground than I am at these days. At what level do you feel like partnership makes sense for both parties currently?
I mean, system, not much. The only thing, like, you should not identify orcs that you wanted to have. You should incentivize, like,
100. Agreed. We're on the same track.
If you win or if you get top three, that's when you get that and that and that. It should feel authentic.
Earned.
Honestly, like, at this point, for instance, maybe not as the Toronto Defiant, but imagine, like, once the Defiant consolidate under one brand, right?
Sure.
And then there's incentive for someone like Ibai to show up and have some coy representation in Overwatch. And then Ibai is incentivized to sell that skin within Overwatch, right?
Now,
think of that, right? Then hopefully other organizations that have similar clout want to be part of that system. And considering that the buy-in price into Overwatch is currently very low, like, I would say, like, it's barely livable for most of those guys. most of them that are sponsored probably do not have livable salaries. They need to supplement. But keep that in mind. Like, the overhead is not as astronomical in Overwatch right now, right? So, like, it's not the necessarily, like, the price tag that's dissuading people. It's just, like, if you have a team of five and maybe a coach, that's six people, pay each of them 2K, that's really not much in comparison to other big esports titles. You're probably paying your team less than you would pay your individual player in, like, a League of Legends title or, like, a CS title, right? So it's really about the value that the esports brings. And it cannot... The answer to what, why would I invest in Overwatch cannot just be it gives me points at the esports World Cup and it might give me a stipend for that particular esports. The answer has to be there's intrinsic value in being in this scene because the developer has signaled that while it doesn't have those assets yet, will eventually lead to a system where it's mutually beneficial. And you also have to say that as it gets more and more a competitive title, PvE is dead. We are now moving, like, we're putting a lot of emphasis on competitive play. Competitive play for the first time has become the most played title. Hopefully, this is the most played game mode, sorry. Hopefully, that is the direction in which we're trending. That is a community that wants esports then. That's a community that wants to become better at the game, that will watch player streams, that will watch core streams where people explain how this was a good play and whatnot. And that's then a mutually beneficial synergy where an esports makes sense. I would have hoped that would have happened during the Overwatch League already. Okay, we're here now. But that's the only way. And honestly, like, we're... The probability of this ever popping off is probably around 10% for me, if I had to say.
Yeah, as it stands now, it's very difficult to see a future where Overwatch is, like, this big draw esport. Can it become that given 5 or 6 years? Hard to tell, I think. I think there is a lot of, like, potential, and I hate using that word when it comes to Overwatch because I feel like for the last 5 or 6 years, we've always talked about the potential of Overwatch. But I feel like it has the greatest potential to do the most work. It just depends on how it's handled. I agree that, you know, there are, you know, when you look at, you know, influencers and you look at streamers and how that can kind of, like, intersect when it comes to Overwatch, or not Overwatch, but, like, esports players and as it pertains to Overwatch, that can also be a very big draw. But for you, at what, like, level do you think developer integration or developer partnership would make the most sense? Would it be at, like, the main event level, meaning that, like, the top, what, 6 to 8 teams potentially get integrated into the game with a skin, a spray somehow? Is that something that can be sold to an organizer? Is it at the LAN level? You know, at what degree do you feel like is best serving these organizers that you're trying to court?
Here's the problem, and this is a problem that currently popped off in CS. It's currently the case that the RMRs, the qualifiers for the major, are the most important matches that will be played in the entire calendar year.
And why is that?
It is because everyone who participates, based on projection, or rather, like, last time you had 33 million, therefore, like, the breakdown was like 4.5 million USD per team was accrued through these stickers.
Yeah.
The difference, like, being the best team and be just participating is not substantial in that regard, right? So you do not want to have an incentive structure where, like, just getting in, the participation medal is golden. That's not what you want, right? Yeah. So there has to be a more feasible system where, like, there's still incentive, but the fall off and the hurdles and the thresholds cannot be this drastic. It has to be disseminated in some way. And that can be just being broken down into smaller bits and disseminated over, you know, all the prize pools, even at the regional level. But really, like, I think just giving some assurances down the line and some... I'm not sure. Like, I'm not a huge fan of partnership agreements is the problem. That promotes complacency. But
sure, it doesn't have to... Yeah, it doesn't have to be partnership agreements, but at some level, when do organizations either interface or interact or are actively supported by the developer? Is it like top four at a main event? Is it strictly at LAN? Like, where do you feel like the best, like I the mean, golden ratio is?
I think it depends on the scale, because like realistically, if you break it down and like, okay, you make playoffs in NA and you get $15, yeah, you're financially supported. But
yeah,
it doesn't matter. Therefore, like, you want to top load. But as funding increases, I think like the breakdown, it gets more feasible where you can share more significant, even on a regional level, where it actually puts a dent into it, and where it does subsidize the place or the lifestyle or the living that players can make. Yeah, it's hard to say. I think it probably the best way, and it's going to suck because that sort of feels like taxing. But if you had revenue share, the developer gets some, the team of that skin gets some, and then a fraction of that goes into the wider system and subsidizes that. And even those that just participate get some in order to be able to attack those top dogs. I think that's probably the best that you can do. I'm not sure at which level that should grip. I think realistically, look, I'll tag this on at the end of this broadcast, because the real ones will listen here, but it's fucking patently absurd what kind of oppositions we've had to sponsors. And there's no moral argument to be made that we shed on gambling sponsors, we shed on NFT sponsors, we shed on crypto sponsors, and now we like the proportionality of like that money coming from Saudi Arabia, I just don't see it. There's something very weird. Like we cried all the way into something that I think most people would say is objectively morally worse. And now not only are we silent, but we just like repelled, especially in the case of gambling, where like there are gambling institutions and licenses that really like do a lot in order to protect minors, in order to protect you know, gambling addicts, and in terms of like, you know, not having too much invested in each bet, only accepting max bets. It was just called gambling and it was thrown out, right? And that invited arguably morally worse fun or like sponsors into this circle, and there's not a proportional response to this. So, like, that would be another thing where we just open it up more to and incentivize match gambling in some way, incentivize fantasy leagues in some way. Allow this for, like, choose well for sure in terms of what kind of sponsors or gambling sponsors you let in, but surely that has to be the lesser evil. And I will disclose here, of course, like I work for a company called GG Recon that is owned by Betfred, so they receive my bias, right? But yeah, I think that's a way lesser evil, and how all sports run, and it's a significant part of the monetization ecosystem in those other sports. And it's wild that we ran those guys out of town, and now we're here, you know. So like the other thing would be allow more sponsors, because looking at those, it's once again rather restricted in what is possible.
Yeah. Yep. It's, I mean, we did our rule book breakdown. You can go back, I think, a couple, 3 or 4 episodes. We went through those that list, and there's not a ton of wiggle room. It's still to this day so comical to me that the Overwatch League had the sponsors that they had, but also the sponsors that they had, if that makes any sense. You know, like, in what world is TeamSpeak A used, and B, is it, what, why, I get it. You got to get some money, but like, yeah, it's just so bizarre. The official VoIP, you know, it just never really worked.
I think it's really important to also acknowledge that big sponsor doesn't necessarily mean big money. Like, there are absolutely sponsorships in esports where I'm just throwing out a name, but like the size of Coca-Cola that you get on as a sponsor, and their value they bring is you have got a huge brand as a sponsor, but their actual financial commitment is actually not even big at all. Maybe they're doing it you're getting in for free and therefore attracting other sponsors that will pay big because, Coca-Cola is interested, right?
Was that not kind of the ploy of like Bobby Kotick? Was that not like kind of the big rumor? Is that because he was also on the board of Coca-Cola that he could like just swing that and
I don't recall how that worked, and I'm not sure like if that's even the case, but I'm just talking like from like roughly speaking, even in esports organizations.
I think that's also fair. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not talking particularities, but like patterns that we observe in esports.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's at the end of the day, it is about like the economic bottom line that makes this sustainable, right? But yeah, it's the optics of it do not clearly tell the economics.
Yeah. Agreed. And that adds a lot of context as to why you're not seeing a ton of org step in. As Yiska is like very clearly laid out, there's not a lot to bite for an org in Overwatch today. Will that change with more information coming out as we get closer to LANs, as we get deeper into the actual group stages and not the qualifiers? Possibly. It's something that I fully expected, that teams are going to be, you know, kind of slow rolled by a lot of these orgs until something actually manifests, something tangible can be gained for these organizations, and not just hope to like flip them for the Esports World Cup, which, like you're rightly pointing out, is kind of the big like fun thing to get to right now. You got to get some money, as maybe unethical or ethically challenging as it is. It's tough. It's tough, and I think you're, again, inherently and truthfully pointing towards the right direction when it comes to any kind of like interfacing from teams and developers that has to exist, because we can't just rely on the players, and we also don't know how much value like big players these days really, really bring, right? I think it is the one thing that teams and players can kind of cultivate and challenge on their own. Is building up their own brands, growing their social media presence, and trying to leverage that into, you know, maybe getting an organization. It's possible, right? I think that's the one thing that you have control over. The rest of it kind of falls in Blizzard's lap, so we will have to wait and see what kind of packages they want to ship at us. Future of OWCS, that is kind of the... I agree, it has to be sooner rather than later, but it's just... It seems hard to foresee the layoffs with how quickly this has spun up, how, like you mentioned at the top of the hour, not a lot of communication coming out for a lot of these teams. I would hope that they have some kind of info to work with, but it doesn't feel like it. Feels a little rough, but such is Overwatch, right? It's not our first rodeo. We've gone through some little rough patches, and there's usually some good news. Relatively. Coming soon. That being said, do want to get you out of here. Anything coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, I think at the time of this being published, I will have put out the McGravy interview. I'll also have some editorial side. I looked into it a little bit further, explaining the timeline of the bonanza that we had shortly before the roster deadline in NA. Like collapsing, us around a little bit how that went, and yeah, then there's still a video that's yet to publish. I think it's coming out next week on potential new retirement waves that we might see based on the patterns I observed and why we have seen retirements. And yeah, that's so far.
Very, very good. I believe I'm going to try to go see the new Dune movie.
Oh, yeah.
I watched the first one last night. Very, very fun.
Did you like it?
Yeah, no, it was super, super good. You know me and how I consume my content. I did go through quite a few video essays diving into the Dune series quite a bit. So I primed myself. I also saw a lot of like headlines talking about how Villeneuve is very like opposed to dialogue, which I thought was like a very interesting thing to try to like spot like throughout the movie, where it's just like, yeah, I feel like a lot of like Marvel movies or a lot of like mainstream like Hollywood blockbusters are like, there's a lot of like exposition here. There's a lot of talking here, and there just isn't. There's no like, there's not, there's very few like big speeches, and like it's very particular on when it is talking to you and when it's showing you a lot of things. It is a little confusing. I can see how it's very confusing for some people who aren't necessarily super primed or like know the source material. And it kind of is confusing because it doesn't do a lot of exposition. So it is kind of, it doesn't hold your hand at all. I think that's the one big thing that I kind of took away from it, where it's like trying to view it without any kind of context. It is like on the surface level very clear, but I think some things kind of get lost in the ambiguity of certain, you know, goings on, so without getting into the nitty gritty. But I do want to see that. I am working on a long form piece. Been hitting the pavement a little bit, actually doing a little bit of journalism. I know it's crazy. Talked to a couple real time strategy developers.
Nice.
Going through their games, kind of trying to highlight them, but also exploring the rebirth of that genre. It feels like I'm stumbling across new titles day after day that are either going into early access within the coming months or so years. And you know, it's actually really, really cool to see that genre of video game actually getting some kind of development pressure in the wake of Blizzard kind of being very lackadaisical in that way. So thought that was very fun. That was very selfish of me, and yeah, doing a little bit of that.
Nice.
It's my own little pet project.
Anyone I would know that you talked to?
Not really. The games maybe. I spoke to a developer. I'll tell you after the show on one of them, because I thought it was very funny on how I stumbled across it. But I spoke to one of the team members at Sunspear Games, who were developing Immortal Gates of Pyre.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you caught that.
Nice.
That was really cool. Got some insight there. They had some very interesting things to say about Blizzard, which I thought was fun. And yeah, just kind of pick their brains a little bit, why they think RTSs are back on the market, yada, yada, yada.
So you didn't talk to David Kim?
No, not David Kim. That would be very funny. I know there's a there's a part of me that would love to pick his brain on some things, but no, I did not speak to the legendary Mr. Kim. Likely. Oh. I would always love to ask why patch Zergs? Why did you do that to my race?
I mean, they were pretty good for a long time. Were you one of the infested cheeses? Be honest.
No. Oh, come on. You think my games ever lasted long enough to get to infestors?
That's even worse. That's actually worse.
Exactly, baby. We play fast. We play quick.
No, actually, yeah, no. I think infestor players are more honorable.
Okay.
For sure.
Let's abuse the broken things and not just, you know, fight in the honorable boxing arena that is a phone booth, you know? I love a phone booth RTS, okay? Let's just skip all the bullshit. You make your units, I
what
make
do you
my
mean
units.
Bullshit. Bullshit
is dropping in my base and creating force fields around your units, and I can't actually interface with them. That's bullshit. I want to just, let's just fight. Let's just stand in the middle of the ring, two men in arena, and let's just see who dies first.
Yeah, at 200 population, while the macro is rolling, correct, at 6 bases.
Two very different people. All right, that being said, 335, not 355, we're not that far in the future. We're calling it quits. We'll see you next week with more OWCS drama news, clickbait. Like and subscribe.
Peace.